Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Hear it from the doctor with expert guests from the American Academy of Pediatrics. It's Healthy Children. Now, our favorite mom, Melanie Cole, MS.
If you have ever traveled with children, whether they're little children or even into their teenage years, it is so fun and it can be such a great experience for the kids, but it can also be a challenge for the parents. If the kids are younger, you have to think of all the things you need to bring to keep them occupied and what if they get sick, and there's so many things to think about. And if there's teens, you got to make sure they bring their chargers and that they have enough data. And I mean, there's so many other things, but the health things and the behavior are something that sort of every parent worry about when they're going to travel. My guest today is Dr. Lisa Asta. She's a pediatrician and a spokesman for the American Academy of Pediatrics. Welcome to the show, Dr. Asta. So traveling with kids, wonderful. It's awesome. Let's start with traveling by airplane. What should we think about when we are going to fly somewhere, whether it's in country or out, about things we should bring and plan for?
Thank you for having me today. I'm excited to be talking about kids and travel. Air travel isn't much fun if you're a grown-up, so you sort of have to filter that through what it will be like when you have children with you. I think with kids, planning is the utmost, and some people are good planners and some people are less good planners. So with airplanes, having a plan, trying to decide when you want to pick that flight, knowing that how certain airlines work, and also knowing that children under two, while they are not required to have their own ticket, they will be safer if they are secured in an approved carrier seat on the airplane. So that can require a little bit of thinking about what flights may not completely fill, so that you can have, you can book, if there's two people traveling with the child, you can book the aisle and the window, hoping that the middle seat remains unutilized. So talking sometimes with air travel planners can be helpful. Having your car seats for air, deciding whether you want to get the kids up super early for an early flight, really thinking through the thought process of a red eye. I thought that was going to be a good idea with my toddler, but she couldn't fall asleep in her car seat, and it was kind of worse than flying during the day. So having all your things at hand, knowing what the airline policies are about bringing on food, liquids, entertainment, really thinking it through, and going into any travel plan with you yourself fairly organized and rested, because it's a big hump to get over, a bigger hump with kids, and you'll be a little bit more sane going through that.
And I think, and you know, parents always wonder what they can sort of take through when they're going on airplanes as far as food and drink. And, you know, it can be expensive to buy stuff at the airport to bring on. So, I mean, do we know the rules as far as, like, formula or breast milk in a bottle already? Or, you know, any of those? Can we bring granola bars and things like that on? Because we should always have snacks for the kids.
The rules are always changing. And I had this exact experience because my daughter wanted a certain kind of beverage. And when we got bumped off a flight in Colorado when she was a toddler, it was kind of challenging. Rules are always changing with air safety and TSA, and I would encourage parents to look at the most updated information. And sometimes you will get experiences at security that may not dovetail with that. So being very, very knowledgeable of what your luggage allowance is, how many ounces or milliliters, and what you can bring. I think that it's always good to bring things for children to drink on the way up and the way down, and for some kids who are in their negative stage and don't, which I also experienced with my daughter, no, I don't want to drink.
The negative
stage, I don't want to drink. So my solution was on future flights to bring something like you bring up, like a granola bar. Something was very chewy for her that I knew she would enjoy for takeoff and landing, which didn't require her to do what I wanted to do. Yeah, I would just check because the rules are constantly changing, and whether you can bring powder, whether you can bring liquid, generally there are allowances for that, and you want to see what the current recommendations are and ask questions of representatives there. They can be helpful, and then, you know, if you check and double check, because you want to make sure you have accurate information. And sure, pack that sandwich for your child. I always do. That way I know what I'm getting. I don't have to wait for the food to be served if there's turbulence and the flight attendants aren't up and around. I think really going into it, it's almost like a large camping trip while you're on the airplane. Have your wipes so that you can clean down the immediate area there by you. Have paper towels. Potentially have some Ziploc bags for oops. You can get smaller bottles for if you are traveling long destinations. I always recommend, I have a whole list for parents, which is to take some small bottles of fever reducers in case you need that on the plane or you want a pain medication. Obviously, it has to be under the TSA milliliter ounces requirement. And also, if you're returning from a long trip and there's a chance that you may have picked up a tummy virus, I'm a big fan of throwing a few of those powdered sports drinks, or they have the rehydration powders just in your bag. So in case you need something that's easily digestible to drink, then you can just ask for water and make it up yourself.
So we're going to talk about the traveling medicine cabinet, because I am one of those parents that does try and, especially if I'm leaving the country, even to Canada, I want to bring everything. We'll get to that. But while we're still, you were mentioning security. You know, what do we say to our children, Dr. Asta, especially our 9-year-old and 10-year-old boys, about standing around in line and not making, you know, bomb jokes and not making gun motions and not doing all of those things, because, you know, it can be funny to a kid and it's not funny to the TSA.
I think if you've spoken with your children, and children of that age certainly may have been aware, no matter how much we try to shield them from the media, at that age we're having engaged discussions about current events at their age of understanding. And the focus with children when things are very stressful is always to look at the people who are, you know, protecting and what we're doing to be very positive. And just like you've taught your children to respect, you know, the fire people and other community leaders and safety people, then it's a similar thing when you go through security. These are the people who make the plane safe. And that this is a place where we are, you know, very appropriate about the things that we talk about. And it is not, you know, a place where we jostle or fight. And you should have house rules where, you know, there are places where, you know, you will quietly, you know, go through the procedure, and you can practice it at home. There's videos online to show the kids what they're going to do ahead of doing it. And, you know, engage them in giving their chores. It's like, you know, you need to put this there, you know, dress them in something that's simple in terms of what needs to come off, which is different based on the age. Again, I would review the website for what the current recommendations are, because they may be changing. Parents may have the pre-check, which makes it simpler for us, and you can see how that, you know, may make things easier flying with the entire family. It's a challenge, and I think preparing the kids ahead of time, and just like you would in any other situation, if kids have been out to a movie, you know, we've gone through the fact that, you know, we don't shout fire when we're in a movie theater, same kind of thing. And you can, you know, ideally you've done those pieces before so that it generalizes to, you know, sort of a higher stakes situation where it will be a delay and it will be a problem if the kids misbehave in a way that is not lawful going through airport security.
So now the traveling medicine cabinet. So if you're traveling overseas, if you're traveling anywhere, do you think it's a good idea for parents to maybe let their pediatrician know that they are traveling somewhere out of the country? And what do you bring? You bring your Motrin, you bring all of these things, maybe prophylactic antibiotics if your kid is susceptible to, I mean, if you're going to Mexico and there's all the water issues there, or if you're going someplace where you're not quite sure if they're going to have, I mean, what do you bring? How do you know?
I pack everything. I think getting savvy with international travel, people are definitely on a continuum. And if you have never done it before, even if you feel like we're just going to a resort in Mexico or the Caribbean, it really is worth checking in with your pediatrician for us to teach and educate you. CDC has an amazing website, cdc.gov/travel, where you can type in your destination, and as a parent traveling with children, get excellent advice. Certain destinations require vaccinations. Certain destinations require medication to prophylax against malaria. I think understanding what mosquito-borne illness, be it Zika or chikungunya in certain areas, again, everything is always changing. There may be outbreaks in certain areas of the world. So as the world becomes smaller and families are from across the globe, even if you are traveling back to home country from the United States, there are considerations. There is a lot of measles internationally, and there are specific recommendations for making sure that American children and all children are protected from measles so that they don't contract it when they're overseas and imported into the United States. And as far as prophylactic antibiotics go, that really depends on location. I think that it is always more appropriate to be seen by someone in country who is recommended than self-diagnosing and treating, because certain infections, the result can be poor if you are self-treating with an antibiotic. So that's a conversation to have with your pediatrician, and also, you know, based on your child's previous health. If your child has prescription medications such as EpiPens or inhalers, do take them with. It's the trip that you don't take them that you will need them. And it can be challenging to find those medications. And you may be able to purchase certain things like antibiotics over the counter, but you can't always be guaranteed that they are what they are and that their potency is appropriate and they are safe to use.
So what about traveling by car? Because that's really, I mean, certainly one of my worst nightmares, but it's gotten easier, I think, for parents in the past years because of things like, you know, TVs and movies in the car, or they've got their phones with them everywhere so they can watch videos or do whatever they want in the car. So it's a little easier to keep them occupied. However, the question then begs, should you let everybody just sit there on their phones, or should you play I Spy, or, you know, your kids roll their eyeballs at you and really, Mom, this isn't the 50s. But it does give a good chance for kids and parents to communicate when they're riding around in the car.
I think that there is definitely a wider variety of things to do, and I think that it is concerning when you're in your family unit, especially with younger children, and you are not using those golden years to communicate and you just have the child plugged into a video. There are different recommendations for screen time based on the age of the child. And, you know, overall using media as a babysitter is really less than ideal. And I think that family trips and vacations, you can have a media plan for that too, which is we will use certain amounts at certain times. And we will also engage as a family doing things, because if everybody's, it's very difficult to have a group experience if everybody is doing something separate. You can certainly talk about the media that you're consuming. Oh, I saw this and I read that and did you know that? But certainly engaging in a game together, you know, for kids who are car sick, looking out the window is going to be better. And it really is bonding and family time that you can share a joint experience. You can certainly talk about the destination where you're going, and a certain amount of eye rolling and boredom in children is not the worst thing in the world, and you can set limits. Some families, you know, for parents that they are always plugged in, and it might seem strange to restrict that. I think that you have to decide what your values are for your family, how you want your children to communicate. Do you want them to be able to have some resilience when they are, you know, unplugged from their elements? And, you know, it is much more difficult if you're driving or you're the other parent in the front or the other adult traveling along to, you know, monitor what everybody is doing. So, you know, it's a great Pandora's box. And I think that
it certainly is
at a time. Yeah. Are good to have.
They are. And I mean, to me, traveling car trips, road trips, I'm not a big car person anyway. So I try and distract myself with using them. But what about kids who get nauseous and a little bit sick in their car? You know, I mean, you don't want to feed your kids Coke. We don't want to give them, but does help with nausea. And so what do you do if kids get a little car sick here and there?
I think that for kids who are car sick, most parents are aware before of a long car trip that that's the issue, and it really depends on the kind of car trip you're looking at. Certainly windy roads will be more problematic than straight on highways. And I think that if the common sense remedies, you know, not looking at something inside the car, you know, being able to look out at the horizon, which, you know, the ability to have the lap positioning booster seats for the young school age kids are really great because they get them up to be able to see better out the window. Having plenty of ventilation, those are all things. Having something light to eat and not something heavy. If your child has really severe car sickness, that's something you should discuss with your pediatrician. There's lots of medications that are sold that may or may not be effective, as well as prescription medications that may or may not be effective or appropriate for the age of the child. So I would plan ahead, and some kids are more prone to it than others, and, you know, looking out the window, you know, not reading. This also sort of brings up not reading on your phone in the car, trying to position that child, you know, by a window appropriately restrained in an age-appropriate car seat or belt is going to be your best option. And then, you know, discuss with your pediatrician what is effective. And there's lots of home remedies. People do ginger. People do the pressure bands. And if you really haven't gotten success, have a conversation based on, you know, there may be interactions between medications your child's already taken and some of the medications that are sold over the counter. Some of the ones that are sold over the counter are not indicated for very young children.
So one of the things that I used to notice when my kids were little, and Dr. Asta, they're teens now, so I don't have to worry as much about it, but the sleeping thing, sleeping in a new bed, sleeping while you travel, sleeping if you're flying overseas, there's certainly the time change, or even if you're going, you know, from Chicago to California. And then that new bed thing, especially for toddlers. So do you prepare them in advance for sleeping in a different bed? And then sometimes none of us get any sleep, and then it's exhausting traveling.
I recently was listening to some research that talked about this, and it is related to us being just hypervigilant in a new sleeping environment. So I'm not really sure, based on our understandings of the way we are, that we're more vigilant in a new sleeping environment because it's not our usual, whether there's a whole lot of different ways to change that. Some people adapt very nicely to a new arrangement. Other people, you know, it's not the right mattress, the lighting's different, you know, there may be a fan, maybe very noisy, or it may be very quiet and we're used to noisy. So again, for me, I try to go into vacations, and it seems counterintuitive, trying to rest up ahead of time because you know that there's going to be that sleep. And for international travel, you know, really think to yourself, or travel that involves a time zone change, what time is it going to be when you get there and how long have you been up? My personal preference for international is to arrive late in the day so that I'm going to be tired from the airplane and the kids are going to be tired and we can just all go to bed, crash
into
bed,
best.
Wake up tomorrow. Right.
I want people to hear you because there is London flights that go in the morning, you mm-hmm. know, if people are flying. And you fly in the morning, you get there at 10:30 at night. You fly through customs, get to your hotel, and everybody goes to sleep. And it's wonderful because you wake up on their time and you wake up without that jet lag. It works. But people who do that night flight, it's so hard. You get there in the morning and you're supposed to stay up all day. And so, yeah that's a great, great tip, is that morning flight arriving at night, because then you all go to sleep.
And the other thing for American flights, you know, domestic flights, is early flights in the morning are often less likely to be canceled. You're not hitting traffic going into the airport. Security tends to be lighter, and it is insanely painful to get up at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning. But I think you more than make it up in fewer delays and less stress on yourself at the airport. And again, you can look when you're booking the flight. Can you tell I'm a planner? To see, you know, what percentage of the flights, you know, get delayed, how often do they leave on time, because as the day, you know, goes on, and we have no ability to control for weather or anything else like that. You know, and holiday travel when everybody is out and about, I mean, again, just take a deep breath and plow through. And, you know, frankly, for people who have small children, you know, and the desire to get together at holidays, I mean, I often think it's easier to move the adults than it is to move the children.
Absolutely, so, it is. That's true.
Have that in mind, too.
So Dr. Asta, wrap it up for us with your best advice for traveling with kids, whether it's medication, things we bring, pre-planning, planning for those flight times, dressing our kids, car travel, you know, just your best advice. Wrap it up for us.
I think it can be done. the degree of difficulty seems to get a little bit harder every year. But I think if you think it through and you have enough time to make some plans, and, you know, you're always going to forget something, and that's okay. I forgot my daughter's underwear on one trip. She had just stopped potty training. And, yeah, we had to buy underwear when we got there. I forgot to pack that. You'll be fine. And even if you're a single adult traveling with small children, if there's people on the other end who love you and care for you, then you hand the children to them and then you go relax.
That is great. That's great advice. And you know, you're listening to Healthy Children. Our expert guests are provided by the American Academy of Pediatrics in conjunction with their consumer website, healthychildren.org. And you can get all of this great information at radiomd.com. You can get it on iHeart or iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher. We're all over the place. So be sure and subscribe and rate and review on iTunes and let them know how you feel about us. Get involved in the conversation, because that way we're all learning from these experts together. This is Melanie Cole for Radio MD. Thanks for listening. Stay well.